If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
Purchase new home, refinance your existing home, give me a call, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. All first responders, military, get substantial discounts. We waive all of our processing fees, and you don't pay any processing fees. All right, that's out of the way. The legal stuff's out of the way. MLS 136675. I guess I got to throw that in there. We've got three established and esteemed and recognized chiefs here in the great state of Illinois. We're going to throw it to Chief Brugman to explain what the topic is today, and then we'll bring on Chief Byrd and Chief Leonis to start the conversation. Chief Brugman, fire away, buddy.
Yeah, so this week is actually a new Chief's orientation class that's taking place in Peoria. Once a year, the Illinois Law Enforcement Training and Standards Board Executive Institute puts on a three-day training for new chiefs. So if you're a new chief or you're going to be a new chief within the next 6 months, they put kind of a, now I wouldn't want to say a crash course, but they put together a course on, you know, kind of what you can expect or what's happening. So today we thought that we would sit and talk together about, I've been a chief for about 4 years. Joe's been a chief, it looks like, for like 1730. I don't know.
Yeah.
Dave Byrd's been a chief for a while. So I think we were going to just talk about, you know, after we've been a chief for a little bit, you know, what are some of the things that we wish we knew going into the job? Some of the things that are important when we're taking on the job, and then talk a little bit about how ILACP is preparing new chiefs, some of the programs that we have. So, you know, some interesting takes on, you know, kind of what did we learn kind of going through this whole process. And I know Joe had a privilege of going up or coming down, I guess, from where he is to Peoria and speaking at the new chiefs orientation this week. So, I'll kick it to Joe. If you want to talk a little bit about, you know, your experiences there, or Dave, if you have some questions.
Can I start real quick with,
you go,
you know, what's it like to go through the interview process to become a chief? Can you start there and then work your way through to then becoming a chief, and then all of the things that happen after you become a chief, right? Because I'm friends with a lot of law enforcement and guys that, here, I'll give you an example. Mike Rodriguez, right? He was a deputy chief at BG at Buffalo Grove, and Commander Stubler Jason, who was out in Naperville, just became, you know, another good friend
chief
of mine.
Chief of LaSalle, right?
Yeah. He just became the chief down in LaSalle. So I'm sure they're both at the meeting that Chief Leonis just spoke at. But what is that like for the chiefs that are watching this, or not for the chiefs, for the law enforcement that are watching this, and the general public? What's it like to, when a chief position is posted, guys, what happens? And then take us, so that'll be the first part, if you would. And then the next part, you know, all these things are going through your head. What am I answering it correctly? What should I say? How should I say it? You know, how do I position myself? And then once you get the position, then what happens? Is that, you know, can we do that?
I think, yeah, we can do that. And I can probably start, because I'm going to be very short, because I had a completely different experience than Chief Leonis and Chief Byrd. I came up through this department. I got hired here 27 years ago. And I've been the chief for about 4 years, but prior to that, I was a captain. And a captain is kind of like second in command. We have a couple captains here in the department. So I kind of worked my way up through the ranks. And I was, for lack of a better word, kind of the heir apparent when their chief was leaving. Our former chief, who's now my mayor, by the way, was actually grooming me to be the next police chief. So, you know, I had a lot of opportunities. Where my interview process was very short, I kind of think of my interview process as my entire career moving up to that. So I was kind of the one that was chosen. I was the only one that actually put in for the position, because we were going to go internal. And so I did have an interview process with our mayor, with our city administrator, our HR director, and talked about things. But Unfortunately for me, it was kind of a foregone conclusion that I was probably going to be the next chief. In Chief Leonis and Chief Byrd, they're going to have completely different things because they came from outside organizations. So that's where the interesting thing kind of comes through. So I'll kick it to one of them.
So it was kind of like eight people stood in a line and said, whoever wants to become chief, step forward. And everybody stepped back and you were still standing there.
Well, see, I don't say that way. I did want to be chief. At this point, there wasn't a lot of other people in my organization that were ready. Personally, professionally, had not done a lot of the things that's kind of expected to be a chief. You know, before you want to become a chief, there are prerequisites, or even just recommended things like making sure maybe you have your master's degree in some sort of management, some sort of human resources, something like that. It's not always a prerequisite. A lot of chiefs a lot of departments, cities require a chief to have some kind of an executive leadership training, like the FBINA, National Academy, or Northwestern School of Police Staff and Command, or University of Louisville, SPI. So something along those lines, some kind of executive level leadership class or course, showing that you've kind of done that. And at this point in my career, I was one of the only ones, that had all of those prerequisites. So
are you looking at future leaders within your organization? Do you think it'll just be another graduation to the ranks, or when the
time I would comes? Hope so. I think that's the goal of any chief, is to take a look within your organization and try to train your replacement. Because if you're not able to train that replacement within your organization, then, you know, it's not always possible, but I think that's the goal, is to keep that moving forward, to get those people that know a lot about your organization. Sometimes organizations are, for lack of a better word, broken. And they need some fixing, and they need somebody from the outside to come in and help put that back on track. We're very fortunate. I don't think ours is, and it hasn't been for quite some time. So if I can keep our track moving forward with an internal candidate and show people from the bottom up that there's opportunities for advancement within the organization, there's opportunity for somebody to get hired as a patrol officer like me 27 years ago to become the chief and become the head of the organization someday.
All right, Chief Byrd, what's your path?
Yeah, mine was way different. Kirk said, I mean, look, at the end of the day, and I agree with Kirk wholeheartedly, and I'm going to be transparent and say I benefited from this opportunity as an outsider to come into the city of DeKalb. But I will tell you that my deputy chief, and I have a couple of commanders that could have been chief of police here in DeKalb. And I believe that, with all my heart, and you know, after being here 5 years, they truly, you know, like I said, I want to be a hypocrite about it because I did benefit from it, from the opportunity. But I agree with Kirk. The goal should be to have an internal candidate come up through the ranks and be the chief of police. Because then if you don't, and it's not a zero sum thing, but I guess at the end of the day, like, what are you saying about, you know, your personnel in the department if you can't groom someone to run your police department, you know, especially a department of any, let's say a medium size or larger, they should be able to do that. So, I'm with Kirk 100% on that. I hope that's what occurs when I leave here, that, we have someone who started their career in the DeKalb Police Department, and that he or she becomes chief of police after my term is up. But, as far as the process, it was very different because I was coming from an outside agency. Of course, I was with the Illinois State Police. I had to go through a series of interviews, you know, and actually I've been on a couple of search committees for chief of police. So I've seen both sides of the coin, Dave, you know, being a part of it, coming in, seeking the position, and also being on the committee evaluating someone who is seeking the position. So I understand that two aspects of it. But you know, it's a long drawn out process. In most cases, it can last sometimes 2 to 3 months. It just depends. But you know, you're required to You fill out an application. You got to look at the requirements and see if you meet the requirements. I mean, that's the first step. You know, do I have what they're looking for as far as their requirements? And if you meet those goals and those concepts, then you, of course, you submit your resume, you submit your application. Usually it starts out in most cases with like a quick Zoom interview for maybe about, let's say sometimes you will have 70, maybe 70 or 50, depending on how significant this job is. Candidates that might apply, they'll pick maybe 20 that they think are strong candidates. They'll do a Zoom interview process first. After the Zoom, they'll break that down even further, and that list will decrease to maybe 8, and then they'll do some face-to-face interviews and try to get it down to 3. And then you want to bring in those 3 to maybe have a interview with whoever the, official hiring person is for that city or municipality. So, in a nutshell, it's pretty fast, but, it starts with the application. It goes to most times a Zoom interview. And from there, you go through several panels of interviews where you interview with, like for DeKalb, I had to interview with people from Northern Illinois. There was a committee or a panel of law enforcement officials. There was a panel of community members. There was a DeKalb Police Department panel. And that encompassed sworn and civilian personnel. So you go through this round robin of rooms where you're going from one room to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. And they have different questions for you, and you just try to win the day, Dave, in a nutshell. That's how I kind of, like I said, that's a fast track I went for me, but it was definitely different from Kirk.
Kind of like speed dating, right, Kirk?
Mine was just one person to date, though. So he had a bunch.
I had a bunch.
He had a bunch of people he had to date.
Yeah, I had a bunch.
All right, Chief Leon. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kirk.
No, I was just saying, I'm very fortunate to not have to go through that whole process that they've gone through. And it is a long and arduous process with a lot of different things to go. So, Joe, you can go.
Yeah, right, I was going to say that the process itself, or even just deciding whether to go internal or external, is really up to the city or the municipality. And, if you look at some cities like Seattle or Chicago or the major cities, a new mayor comes in and it's part of their executive team. So they pick a new police chief, they pick a new department head pretty much for everything. Just like, like at the White House or whatever, you get your staff together and those people aren't expected to stay beyond that one administration. So some cities, it's just a rolling person, and it's unlikely in a lot of those cases it's going to be an internal candidate because the person's going to bring in sort of their team. I know that like for state police, the director is chosen by the governor. And I don't know what that process is, but typically from what I've seen, a lot of times it's an exterior and it's an outside candidate coming in. I know Brendan Kelly is, I think he was a prosecutor down in Southern Illinois for a long time. And I think he's right now the longest standing director that the state police have had. So yep. It just depends on the community. It depends on the agency and what their needs are. And what nobody else has said is the timing. So Kirk's the chief now. Let's say he has 2 deputy chiefs or captains he's grooming that are well prepared for that position, but Kirk wants to stay around for another 5 years or 15 years or whatever it is. These people are going to age out. They're going to decide, okay, well, if I want to reach the top of my profession, I'm going to have to go somewhere else because, whether it's Chief Byrd or Chief Brueggemann, there's going to be somebody already filling that role. So sometimes the timing doesn't work out. You could have great staff, but then they go out and become chiefs in other locations. I know for a long time, Naperville had that happen, and other communities, their deputy chiefs have gone out to become chiefs in other towns. So it just is, it's all depending on the timing and then the need of the department. As Kirk pointed out, you may have a need for an outside person because you just need a wholesale change. There's things that are not working right. And, whether the talent's there or not, they just want a change of scenery, if you will.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that a change of scenery is going to be good for the department. I mean, look what happened before they promoted Chief Byrd's right honorable friend, Chief Snelling, to Chicago Police. They brought in a guy from, I think, Dallas. That the state, you know, Dave, you know, we're not going to start bashing chiefs here, but, you know, the rank and file and the leadership, from what I'm talking to police officers, wasn't a good fit, right? So, you know, sometimes you have a change of leadership, and then leadership picks a candidate, and then the candidate becomes the chief or superintendent in this case. And it looked good in the nominating committee and the people that voted for the new chief, but then the chief becomes the chief. It doesn't even know where the north side of the city versus the south side of the city is, and it's completely lost, right? So I'm sure those are the challenges that you guys have to face when doing your jobs as well. So
it's institutional knowledge. So I'll be completely transparent. I love Brendan Kelly, and I worked for him before I came here, and I love the man. But I still believe that the head of the state police should be a state police officer. I feel the same way about CPD. Yep. It's institutional knowledge. People have given their whole careers to the agency. And when you have 2,000, well, in the case of state police, you have 2,000 officers, CPD, 13,000. You mean to tell me you can't find one person from those ranks that can run that department? And I'm just going to be completely honest. It's a slap in the face if you ask me. And like I said, when I first started my statement, I know I benefited from it here in DeKalb, but I will tell you that my deputy chief, who almost has 30 years of service with DPD, his whole career could have been chief here. And then I just would have been moving somewhere else. That's fine. That's why going forward, Dave, I'm going to do everything in my power to ensure that someone from the ranks of the DeKalb Police Department who has institutional knowledge and is prepared and ready to take on the task of chief. And like Joe said, it doesn't come, unfortunately, you know, look, if the rank and file had this decision, believe me, they would want someone within their ranks for most of the time, unless, like Kirk said, that the system is broken and they don't believe that person is in the, you know, within the organization. But I find it hard to believe that you can't locate that person within the ranks. Larry Snelling's doing a great job for CPD, and I think in part because he came up through the ranks.
Joe made a good point about timing. Timing, I have benefited so well from timing in my career of testing well, because, you know, we've talked about in other things and how, you know, you test for sergeant and you get promoted and test for lieutenant and test for captain or different things like that. And the timing has worked out very well in my career that those positions came open at the right time. And I did the right things at those times. I've benefited to be chief because I had a captain there's two captains and he had much more experience than me. And he didn't want to wait around for our chief to leave. So he left and he went to be a chief somewhere else. And then that put me up to the top for those last two or three years. And then that put me at the top of the list to be the chief the next time. And, you know, Joe coming from Bartlett, I'm sure he was ready to be chief and maybe his chief wasn't ready to leave. And so he said, I'm out of here. I'm going to Lincolnshire. And Lincolnshire has benefited greatly from that. So.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say that I drove down to Peoria the other day and I took the back roads and I went through a lot of small towns of small counties. And in Illinois, we have some really small police departments. And I wouldn't begrudge anybody from moving from one agency to another, especially in a small police department. I'm a small police department here where it's not state police, it's not Chicago, or even the size of DeKalb, where you have a small pool and maybe they could really use some talent to come into their department of, say, 15 officers, 10 officers or whatever, and really make a big deal of, you know, raising up their whole department in terms of training and talent building and all that stuff. So it's tough to put one stamp on it. I think we're all talking from our own anecdotal experiences and maybe what we see. But I do know that, like, I came in, I followed somebody who, you know, whether they were popular or not, you know, they weren't in the job long, And there was a lot of stuff I felt that we needed to accomplish pretty quickly. And it was pretty challenging to come in. And you know, I don't know how Dave feels, but you know, sometimes you come in and you think it's one way and it's a completely different thing. And you don't know where the pitfalls are. You don't know where the blind spots are. And you think, oh, I think everything looks pretty good. It's going to be easy. And then all of a sudden it's not. So, you know, there's challenges everywhere. I just think it's just it's a relationship between you and the city, and you have to figure out where you're at. And sometimes they do outside and it can upset people, but sometimes it is what's necessary. I'm sure Chief Bird's role there in the last 5 years has been transformational for his department. And I'm going to say, I'd like to see my deputy chief become the chief here. That's my goal. But it even though it doesn't happen, it's options. You know, I'm giving that the city options. I'm giving that person an option.
I don't know if you caught that at the beginning. Joe called himself talent. I don't know. It's really nice. Sometimes they bring in some talent. Yeah,
I know that's right. And Joe, you're right, man. It's so situational, like you said. It's, you know, when I got here, I'll tell you, I think they all thought, oh man, he's going to make us all troopers. You know, I mean, that was the first like thing I heard. And I told him like right off the bat, I'm like, look, you guys aren't troopers. I'm not going to, that's not who I am. I'm not going to try to change you guys. I mean, you guys are the DeKalb Police Department. Look, DeKalb Police Department was they're a great agency. They were before I got here. So, you know, there's certain things that I'm sure I brought to the table, like Joe was speaking of, and that made an impact here. And to you guys' point, like, I mean, I would have stayed with ISP if I knew that, you know, director was in my sight line, you know. I had conversations with Director Kelly, and he didn't. I mean, when you don't know your future, how can you know? I couldn't wrap my career based on someone else's, you know. So, that's why you see these guys splinter off, because, I mean, they can't put their lives in a holding pattern. You know, you just can't do it, and you got to look out for yourself at some point. So you do move on and try to find other opportunities, and hopefully, you know, you can be impactful somewhere else, you know, I love DeKalb. It's been great to me. I just my own personal opinion. I would really like for the next chief here to be from within, because I think we have enough personnel here, to Joe's point, when it's 10 or 12 officers, yeah, that person might not be there, but we got over 100 personnel here almost, you know, so I'm like, we should be able to get there.
So you just came from Peoria, right, Chief Leonis? How many new chiefs? I mean, Illinois is a gigantic state, right? It's one of the largest states landmass in the entire country. Top 10, you know, for sure. A lot of towns, like you said, you took the back roads, and I've taken those back roads, you know, myself recently. I went to Washington, Illinois, right outside of Peoria there for a meeting. And I decided to take the back roads because, you know, I don't get to roll around farm country that often. And
it's a beautiful state.
Yeah, right. No,
it's just a wonderful state.
It's a wonderful state. And it's just got so many beautiful areas, and the cornfields and the wheat fields and the soybeans. It's just awesome. Right. Yeah. And, you know, you don't see that. Joe and I live, like, you know, close to each other. I'm in Northbrook, he's in Lincolnshire, so we don't see many cornfields anymore unless you're going down south in southern Illinois. But there are a lot of towns there, right? So how many, and the turnover in the state, it happens, you know, people retire, people get sick, people die, people whatever. How many chiefs were, you know, new chiefs in Illinois did you speak with down in Peoria?
That was, I believe the count was 75.
Wow.
Attendees, and they were mostly chiefs, but there was also deputy chiefs. So it's a leadership course, and it's really built for continuity, and it's really built to, again, get people quickly up to speed on what's going on in the state and just to adjust to their position. And it's a lot of this. It's a lot of panel discussion. I was there representing the Illinois chiefs and the organization and talking about the association, because not everybody's part of the association either. It's a professional association that we need members, and some people, you know, are just kind of going it alone. And we were there to inform them that they're not alone. If they don't want to be, they can have resources. But it was the 29th session. So 29 years that this has been going on. And policing is a little different because if you look back historically, it was sort of like, well, okay, I don't want to go to college. Maybe I don't want to go to the military. So I'll become a firefighter or a police officer. And schools like, Chief Brueggemann mentioned with the FBI Academy or Northwestern were really designed to take the place of college, which many police officers didn't have. They didn't have higher education. So there was a need to get people, you know, figure out how to do a budget or how to do, you know, planning. And today, most chiefs have a master's degree. Most, I mean, I had a master's as a sergeant. So it's sort of an expectation that would be already there. So the leadership classes that we're going to now and the training, the professional development, is completely different than it was 30 years ago. Now it's really advanced quite a bit. And so it's these positions are nuanced. They're not, it's not like a traffic cop where you can just say, okay, we're going 10 over, you get a ticket. When you're dealing with elected officials, and you mentioned it at the beginning, you know, how many different people are involved in the process? Well, you have a lot of bosses as a chief. You have a city or village manager, you have a mayor, you have an elected board, you have citizens, you have officers, you have like the unions, you have a lot of people that are going to want to occupy your time and have a say in the decision making. And to juggle all that together is very complicated. And again, I think it just gets more complicated with you add on technology and the ability for people to give you their opinion in a lot of different ways. So that's sort of what we did. What we talked about down in Peoria, and I'm sure they're continuing that conversation, is just to see, you know, why are you in this job? What are you doing it for? As I've told many new chiefs or people that have wanted to be chiefs, I said, if you're doing this to be happy, you're not going to be happy. This is a, this is, you're signing up for misery most of the time. It's high stress. You'll never know the stress you're under until you're no longer under it. You know, once you leave, you'll feel like, wow, that's a weight that's been lifted. But it's also the most rewarding position that I've held too. So when you see your staff really grow, when you see everybody just performing at a high level, and you see, you know, that's kind of your legacy, that's why you do it. So.
Okay, let's do the biggest shock factor that you weren't expecting that you got hit in the face with after you became chief. We'll start up with Kirk. What was the biggest, like, oh my God moment? What the hell did I get myself into?
Well, I don't think I realized as a captain, as a number two, we always call them the number twos, you know, the amount of cover that the chief provided you. Like, you know, I thought I made a lot of decisions as a captain, but all the decisions were sent through to the chief. I thought I made a lot of decisions and they were my decisions, but ultimately at the end of the day, they're always the chief's decisions. So the amount of cover that I had as a number two was unbelievable. And then now as the chief, everything comes to you, like everything. You make the final decision on pretty much anything that goes on in your organization. And whether it's popular or unpopular, you know, everything's going to be a little bit unpopular. And I think that was the biggest shock to me. And my old chief told me that. He's like, you've got a lot of cover. And then once I realized that, I'm like, yeah, you're right. This every single thing is on you to make that decision. And you have good people and you work with your command staff and you work with your city. But at the end of the day, it's on you. So I didn't have anything like major that happened. And I've had officer-involved shootings, and I've had people get hurt and stuff like that. And those things are obviously, they come with the territory, and they come with a lot of stress and a lot of different things going on like that. But, you know, ultimately, everybody's your responsibility. And I think that was a big one to take on.
Dave, what about you, buddy?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me, you know, that was the historically first black chief in the history of the city of DeKalb since 1856. So, you know, navigating, you know, just that alone initially was, you know, get, I mean, I know we think we've come a long way, you know, here, you know, as far as humanity is concerned, but still a lot of racial tension out there, still a lot of races out there. So, I mean, that was part of that. I had to some of those things you still have to deal with, where people already thinking that you're going to fail and basing it on what? Because, I mean, I had a fantastic career with the state police, so what are you basing this on? You know, and a lot of, you know, and I'll be honest with you, certain times I know it had to be the color of my skin. So it is what it is. But I think that was the thing that I had to deal with initially the most. And it's like I said, and when I talk about these type of situations, the minority, a very small minority of this city of DeKalb that probably feel that way. You know, that's the stuff you got to deal with. Like I said, we're still working on our racial relationships throughout this country and this world, to be honest. And we got a long way to go with that, because I don't think we made as much progress as we think we have. But with that being said, the majority, and when I say the majority, I'm talking about 98-99% of the people in the city of DeKalb accepted me with open arms, and I reciprocated the love that they gave me, and I'm still doing it 5 years later. So that was probably one of the, I think that was the one thing that I had to just kind of come to grips with, that, you know, some people want you to fail, and it's not based on anything other than the color of your skin, and you have to just deal with those type of situations sometimes. So it is what it is. So.
All right, Chief Leonis, the mean streets of Lincolnshire, what was the biggest thing that you had to deal with that you weren't expecting that you'd have to deal with when you became Chief of Lincolnshire?
I think, you know, when I came into this department, it's much smaller than the department I was in. I was in a department similar size, probably to Kirk and Dave's, a little bit smaller. It was like 60 officers, and we have 25 here. So the amount of stuff that you're responsible for, as Kirk pointed out, you know, every little thing you have to think about. I never had dealt with some of the things in this community that I did with my other, you know, like we regulate liquor licensing. I never knew anything about that, or budgeting was different. So there's all those little, you know, things that you eventually figure out. But it was interesting, because when you come from an outside in, you recognize some of the people as people you used to work with, like the same personalities, just a different name. And then you realize how similar each department really is. And even when we all go to these training classes, and I've been able to go across the country with some trainings, you know, and I just see the similarity of department to department, just the philosophy of, you know, why we're doing this. And, you know, even when Chief Bird points out, you know, you have racism, you have sexism, you have all of the different things going on with humanity. But by and large, police officers have risen above most of those things. And I think we uphold justice, and we do it for the right reasons. And especially today, you know, if somebody's not doing that, we're having them exit the profession pretty quickly. So I like where the profession's at. I would say that I've been doing this now for 34 years, and the essence of policing hasn't changed. It's just dealing with people. This is an affluent community, very nice people, supportive of the police department, similar to where you live in Northbrook. They support the police, but they have high expectations too. And, you know, you better know your stuff, and you better be well-trained, and, you know what you're doing. So that was a nice thing to come into, and an expectation. I wasn't sure. You just don't know what you're walking into. So overall, it was a nice place to land, and I've been blessed now. I'll be going in my 10th year next year.
He's the old one. Jeez.
Yeah.
Usually don't last that long statistically in the position.
That's right.
There was a recent thing that just happened, and it's current news, and we could cut it out if you guys don't want to talk about it. And a couple of the ex-chiefs, older chief, retired chief, says, yep, that's why you gotta, I always tell the, you know, the new chiefs to do an audit of the evidence room. What 100%. The hell does that mean? And is that something you guys want to talk about, or
100%. That is exactly what you're supposed to do.
I didn't know what that meant.
That is exactly, that's one of the top two things that get you into liability, for a police department, is your evidence. Your evidence room can, if it's a mess, you lose cases, you get criminal charges, all that sort of stuff. So as a new chief, you really want to make sure when you come in, especially coming from the outside and not knowing what's going on. I did it when I became the chief.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first things we did was have an audit of the evidence room. All right, I'm the chief. I'm responsible from this from here on out. I want to know that everything's there. If it wasn't there, then we need to account for it, or we need to figure out why it wasn't there before I start. And that's one of the first things you do, because we deal with a lot of stuff. We have guns, we have drugs, we have money, we have all that sort of stuff. And when stuff like that goes missing, that's a big, big deal in law enforcement. You lose cases, you get officers, evidence custodians criminally charged. It looks terrible for your community, for your police department. I'll let you guys expand if you had anything to say about that.
Yeah, I was just going to say most agencies have policies in regard to evidence handling and audits and random audits at different mm-hmm. times of the year, scheduled audits. I mean, you could do it a lot of different ways. But there are policies in place for this, Dave. So, but it's, it gets real. I mean, when you're talking about the person who's in charge, though, that's when it gets a little different, because now you got you're the last person in the chain, and you're the one that committing the offenses. So, at least accused of. I will just say that. Of course, everyone's innocent till proven guilty. So, but with that being said, I have planned scheduled audits here, random audits here. I did that with the state police. I would walk into the evidence room and I would take over. I would shut the evidence room down. I would take my evidence custodian and we would start checking random pieces of evidence. Where is it? And and they would take me to it and show me this. And then I'll say, and I'll just go down my list. Where is this? And they would take me to it and show me where it is. And that's how you have your checks and balances. And like I said, these are policies, though, Dave, that they're violating. So, like I said, it's written right here. I can pull it up right now and read you ours. And I'm sure the same thing for Joe and Kirk. They can pull up the policy on evidence handling and the security of the evidence room in their policy manual and show you exactly where that is. So, unfortunately, that's a black eye for law enforcement. No doubt about it. Like I said, if he's proven guilty in this case, so.
Joe, what do you guys do up over in Lincolnshire?
Well, I was going to say, first of all, I would say that I don't know anything about that case other than what's been publicly reported. Right. So I can't say that I know anything more than that. But it didn't seem like an audit violation. It seemed like it was something else, maybe disposal or something. But one of the things, and I'm sure we all do this, is guns, drugs, and money. Kirk mentioned it. That's the trifecta of what you're going to get in trouble for if you're in evidence. But if I walk into the evidence room or I even walk near it, I have somebody with me. If I'm going into a file system that's confidential, I make sure somebody's tracking what I'm doing. So, and that's setting the tone. So we all are accountable to somebody, and you shouldn't just be able to walk into the evidence room with some keys and just walk out, and say, well, I'm the chief. In the olden days, we used to, have a crime scene, let's say a murder case, and the chief would walk in and just walk past the tape and just kind of trounce around the scene or whatever. And I'm saying old days. But today, if we have that, you walk up, you don't walk into the scene until it's been processed. If you do, for some reason, have to go through it, you sign the log, like you set the tone and you set the tone for your entire department. And if you're willing to do it for yourself, they'll be willing to do it for themselves. And you need to set a culture that understands that nobody is above the law and everybody needs to follow the policy. And from the youngest officer up, you have a responsibility, a duty to report. And if you're a supervisor, a duty to detect, which means that if there's something going on, you have to report that. So it sounds like that's what happened in this case. I don't really know, like I said, the details. Yeah. And they had an outside agency deal with the state's attorney. That'll play itself out in court, but it does not look good. And
Hey, and ILACP has the ILEAP program, which is the accreditation program for the state. And that is one of the things that they focus heavily on when you're getting accredited through the state is evidence handling, evidence audits, evidence. So those are a major component. That's the one thing that's probably going to get you sued, other than personnel issues.
Like we said, everybody's innocent until proven guilty, and they'll have their day in court.
They have a day in court.
Right. As well, they should. All right. Just in closing, for other chiefs out there or the public, which is what this is, you know, primarily for, so the public can get the chief's perspective. What is it in your opinion, right? In your own words for the public, what does it mean to each one of you three to be a chief within your communities and to be leaders within your communities? Kirk, fire away.
I am beyond proud to do this. It is just an extreme sense of pride that I was selected and that I get to lead this organization. And I never take that for granted. I think it is such a monumental position to be there. I mean, besides the mayor, realistically, when you look at cities, the chief of police is probably the second most powerful person within that community, right? I mean, as far as what people look up to, everybody knows the police department. Nobody really knows the fire chief. Sorry, fire chiefs out there. nobody knows the EMS chief. But the police chief is. I mean, you are the face of pretty much everything that happens within your city, and people pay attention to what you have to say. They pay attention to how your police department is. They pay attention to how you lead. So for me, it's just an immense amount of pride in being selected and being and still keeping this position. And it's every day trying to prove that you're worthy of it. And then also trying to make sure that we don't stay stale. Like, you get to the top, okay, and you're at the top, and I love my position, but every day you have to challenge yourself that this isn't the end. You have to continue to move forward, and you have to continue to innovate. And there's some days that I get really tired of it. I'm like, gosh, I'm tired. Some days I just want to sit at my desk and be like, all right, I've made it. But you can't do that, So, and that's really. It's really what like Illinois Chiefs does for us. The Illinois Chiefs Association is it's putting you in contact with these other chiefs and learning from other chiefs and learning what's going on with Joe's city and what's going on with Dave's city and what's going on throughout the state. And they're doing something cool and they're doing something new. And it's just, it's exciting. And I think that's probably, all the innovation, everything that's going on. It's kind of what keeps me youthful. So I don't have as much gray hair as those two guys. I don't know how you guys feel. You guys are a lot, obviously, longer in the tooth than me. You've been around a lot longer. I've been here 27 years. You guys are over 30 years. I admire the fact that you guys are still pushing. And I sometimes think to myself, am I going to be able to do this in 5-10 years if I want to go and do this again? I mean, these guys have been doing it a long time, taking on new responsibilities. It's tiring, but they do a fantastic job with it. So,
Dave?
No, I just, for me, it's just, I continue my law enforcement career. I mean, this is my 36th year.
Wow.
Because I still wanted to make an impact, Dave. My job is to build bridges, and that's what I'm doing here in DeKalb. Is building bridges between the DeKalb Police Department and the community. And like I said earlier, I'm just trying to be impactful. This job is, I still have the same passion, for this job as the day I started in 1989. I share that with the rank and file here all the time. I'll be honest with you. I enjoy teaching new officers how to police the right way. I really do. That's my challenge to myself, is to make sure that I teach them, hey, look, we're going to be righteous in our actions at all times. And every time I send an email, that's the first thing I send, when I sign off my email and say, hey, continue to be righteous. Because if we're not righteous in our actions, people aren't going to trust us. And, you know, and there have been some cases like, and we've talked about them on this show plenty of times, where police were not righteous in their actions. And we cannot have those situations occur, you know, anymore. At least, you know, like I said, we'd be naive to think that it wouldn't happen just because it's just too many, you know, too many officers in the world, and all of them are not going to be righteous. We understand that. But I'm trying my best to ensure that these officers that wear the DeKalb uniform are righteous in their actions. And I feel like I'm still making that impact, Dave. So I'm going to stay in it as long as I'm healthy. You know, I told my wife, if I ever get a bad report other from the doctor, other than see you next year, then maybe we'll have this conversation of I'm hanging up and spend time with my grandkids. But right now I still enjoy it, Dave. I have that passion, so I'm going to stay with it.
All right, Chief Leonis, take us out, buddy.
Well, I can't beat what those guys have said. I'll just say that I want to be humble. And I will say at the end of my career at Bartlett, I was asked, you know, like, if you had to do it all over again, would you do it? And I, you know, given everything that I had been through in my career, all the ups and downs, and I'm like, you know, I think I would. And that's one of the reasons why I decided to continue. Is this is the best career for me. It's an honorable profession. I think we all have something to give that profession. And so I enjoy doing it. And I just thought it would be fun. And when you're going into a new department, I also knew I could be fired tomorrow. I'm the only person in the village that serves at the pleasure of the mayor and can be terminated for no cause today. And I don't have a contract and I don't have severance and all that kind of stuff. So you're working without a net, and sometimes that's scary, but sometimes it's fun because you do the right thing for the right reasons. And if it goes well, it goes well. And if it doesn't, they say, see you later. And you gave your best. So I think this position that I'm in is because I enjoy doing it, but I also know it's a temporary thing, you know, keeping a seat warm for somebody else. Somebody else is going to come in here 50 years from now. Nobody will remember any of our names. You know, it'll be a picture on the wall, hopefully, if we're lucky. But some of the impact that we've made with our people will survive. And so, you know, when you leave your department, you come back in 5 years or whatever, maybe nobody recognizes you, but you know them and you know what you did for their careers. And it's just a blast. And, you know, I'm in an age where I can enjoy it. I can kind of set the goals and let people explore new things and do new things. And that's the cool part, is the mentoring and the teaching. And if I didn't have that to do, I think I'd be bored, but there's always something new to do. And nobody really tells me no. So that's kind of cool. I get to have fun with it, but it's certainly a unique job, not for everybody, but I've been very lucky so far. So.
Yeah. Joe said something about making an impact, and, you know, I kind of look at that as well, as like, I hope I can make an impact like these guys make an impact, especially like Joe. I don't know if you know this, but Joe was he taught me at Northwestern School of Staff and Command for 2 days back in 2019. And I still remember it. I remember when he came in that day. I remember what he said. I don't remember what he taught, but I remember how he made us feel. Right. It was about the connection and the relationship and about what he was about. And that made an impact on me as a captain, not even a chief. And, you know, that's hopefully, you know, I can do that in the future for other people like Joe did. And now we're fast friends and, you know, it's been 6 years, but it was awesome that he passed that information along to new chiefs, to new leaders and stuff like that. So hopefully I can do the same thing that he did for me for somebody else.
All right. Well, thanks, gentlemen. This has been another outstanding episode of Behind the Badge, Illinois, sponsored by the great people at Team Hochberg, which is me. Looking to purchase a new home, refinance your existing home, 855-563-2843. Go to 56david.com for your waiving of the processing fees for all veterans, first responders. You work for police, fire, within the organization. We pass it on to everybody and their families. So thanks again, boys. Appreciate it. It was a great segment. And if you're watching this and you like it, please hit the like button, share it with your friends, family, coworkers, and neighbors.
And wish me good luck today. I'm a chili cook-off. Hopefully I'll get
good luck. There's for your fourth place finish and only three entrants have been submitted.
I think there's only made the chili. Come on.
All right, boys, I got to go do loans. Have a great day, guys.
All right, good deal.
Okay, see you guys. Bye.